From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. This week, Lee Memorial Health System celebrates its centennial anniversary of providing medical care to communities in Lee County. We'll explore the health system's rich history and expansive growth from a 15-bed wood-framed building to an expansive network of acute care and specialty hospitals with a capacity of more than 1,400 patient beds. The 100th anniversary also marks the unveiling of the health system's new name. Plus, as the projected path of Hurricane Matthew continues toward Florida, we'll get the latest updates on the storm from the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network Storm Center. We'll find out how officials in Florida are preparing, and we'll hear from the Naples nonprofit Hope for Haiti following Matthew's damage to the island nation. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for being with us. Hurricane Matthew is on track to be very near the east coast of Florida Thursday night after moving across the Bahamas. The latest update from the National Hurricane Center indicates Matthew remains a powerful Category 3 storm with maximum sustained winds at 120 miles per hour. For the remainder of the hour, we'll be getting the latest on Matthew's projected forecast track and exploring how officials in Florida are preparing. And following Matthew's destruction to the island nation of Haiti Tuesday, we'll check in with the Naples-based nonprofit Hope for Haiti, which had about 50 staffers riding out the storm in Haiti, for a look at what's known about Matthew's impact there and the organization's ongoing disaster and humanitarian relief efforts. Joining me now from the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network Storm Center is meteorologist Deborah Alberto. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you.
And I invite listeners to join the conversation with your comments and questions as well. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or reach us on Twitter at WGCU and post with the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And Deborah, what can you tell us about the latest update from the National Hurricane Center? Any significant changes from earlier this morning?
Well, the system did weaken slightly overnight as it made its passage over eastern Cuba. Well, as of this morning, the sustained wind speeds are at 115 miles per hour. Now, as of 11 a.m., they're at 120 miles per hour. And just as expected, the system has begun to re-strengthen as it heads into the warm waters and starts heading over the Bahamas. So that's the most significant change. And also, it has taken that northwesterly turn, which was also anticipated.
All right. And Governor Rick Scott, in his address this morning on Matthew, indicated this storm is a slow-moving one. How so, and what impact could the speed of Matthew's movements have? Would a slow-moving storm potentially have more time over open water to gain strength before approaching Florida? Is this going to work potentially not in our favor?
You are absolutely correct. The National Hurricane Center's forecast is it's currently a Category 3 system right now. The forecast is for it to re-strengthen to a Category 4 system before it brushes the Atlantic coast of Florida. And the slow movement of the storm over the warm waters does help to keep that intensity going. But also the slow movement up the north coast of Florida also will allow the system to dump a little bit more rainfall as well and allow those impacts to be a little bit more prolonged.
Gotcha. And National Hurricane Center Director Rick Knapp said earlier today that the projected path of the storm makes it difficult to predict specific impacts for any given location. Why is that?
Well, whenever you have a storm going paralleling a coastline, it's a little bit harder to predict. And there is unusually high uncertainty at this point when we're usually 36 to 48 hours of a system impacting a landmass. We have a little bit more certainty. So Rick Knapp, as well as Governor Rick Scott and all of officials, are urging folks to be prepared now because a slight deviation in the storm's track or exactly where the center will track in comparison or in relation to the state's east coast could change the impact significantly.
And how should residents stay informed about the progress of Matthew? I imagine the Florida Storms app is a good tool.
Yeah, it's a free option that we offer here at the Florida Public Radio, and it has your evacuation zones and routes as well as open shelters. We're also working around the clock here at the Florida Storm Center, updating the app with the latest warnings and watches, as well as the exact location and intensity of the system.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with meteorologist Deborah Alberto from the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network Storm Center. Thanks so much for the information, Deborah. Thanks.
Thank you.
And we've just heard the latest updates on Hurricane Matthew's current conditions and progress. Now let's explore how state officials are preparing. The South Florida Water Management District oversees a massive system of canals that steers and holds water. WGCU's Topher Four has caught up with spokesperson Randy Smith yesterday to talk about how they're getting ready.
What is the Water Management District doing to prepare for the storm?
At the South Florida Water Management District, we start well in advance of the projected landfall for these storms. And basically what we do is draw the canal water levels down in an effort to create more space in these canals, more capacity for stormwater runoff from rainfall associated with the storm. So in the southern part of the system on Sunday, we started pulling down the water levels in the canals that the Water Management District operates in Miami-Dade County, the Homestead area, Miami, and Broward County. And also adjustments are going to be made in the Big Cypress Basin. Palm Beach County canals are being lowered today.
How far are you dropping them? How much water are you anticipating?
Well, it's not a uniform thing because each canal has its own characteristics of how deep it is, how wide it is, you know, what kind of velocity that it's capable of handling. So we basically look at it on a case-by-case basis. You look at where the heaviest rainfall is forecast to be and what equipment you have to work with as far as pump stations, if you can use gravity to get the water out when there's no high tide. So you just kind of look at the system as a whole with individual operations by basin.
What exactly are you preparing for? Is this standard for like a hurricane of this size? What are you anticipating?
Well, what we are looking for is a forecast from the National Weather Service, National Hurricane Center, and our meteorologists on rainfall projections. And we've seen anything from 2 to 8 inches are forecast, primarily along the East Coast. So the canals in these areas, which would be Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade, would have the lowest of the drawdowns.
Is there anything else I should have asked you that I didn't?
No, I think that's good. I mean, you know, obviously we want people to take this seriously, make your preparations, and, you know, you're getting close to the 11th hour at this point. But we hope that everyone, one of the good things that you can do is go through your neighborhoods and take a look at your storm drains. If you see any obstruction, trees, you know, bushes that have fallen over onto the grates, notify your local drainage district, your city, or your county, because they certainly want to get these cleared out so there's no nothing to impede the water flow that's trying to escape our yards and roads.
Thank you, Randy.
Oh, you bet.
Smack in the middle of the Water Management District is Lake Okeechobee. Its waters are managed by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The Corps is responsible for maintaining the lake's water level so it does not breach the dikes surrounding the lake. As the storm approaches, the Corps is watching the Herbert Hoover Dike's integrity. The dike was completed in the 1960s and is currently undergoing repairs. The lake levels are high right now, and heavy rains could push the lake to its limits. WGCU's Topher Four has also spoke with Corps spokesperson John Campbell today for a talk about this.
What is the Corps doing to get ready as the storm approaches?
Sure. So there's a couple things that we've done in the past few days. Probably the biggest thing that is of most interest is yesterday we conducted an inspection of the Herbert Hoover Dike that surrounds Lake Okeechobee. We do these inspections with increased frequency when the lake gets above elevation 15.5. Today's lake elevation is 15.86. But yesterday's inspection was of the entire dike, and we found no issues of concern. The water level in the lake today doesn't cause us a huge amount of concern that it could lead to a dike breach. It's what's the additional precipitation that either falls on the lake or causes runoff into the lake from points north that forces the water level to rise. That's what causes us the concern. Historically, the lake has had performance issues when we get above elevation 17 and a half, closer to elevation 18. And there's been numerous instances where tropical systems or even non-tropical systems that have heavy rain cause enough precipitation to take the lake upwards of 3 feet in the span of a month. Certainly with an elevated lake level that we have right now, with the right amount of precipitation were to fall, we could see lake levels approaching historic records. We'll see what develops with regards to that, but that's what we are concerned with.
And when you say performance issues, what does that mean?
Yeah, so performance issues, I should have clarified that. Performance issues, when we talk about that, we're talking about movement of material primarily, either some sloughing of the earthen dike, erosion, sometimes sinkholes have developed. Typically, it's stuff where the Corps has had to take some sort of emergency action to stabilize the dike in order to keep it from failing.
You want to avoid that 17, 18-foot mark. Are you looking at right now with where the lake level is drawing down it, which would mean discharges or heavier flows?
Discharges we've been doing all summer, really the discharges we've been doing all year, have been an attempt to mitigate against this type of situation. There's no real ability to take 6 inches off the lake in a day. It takes, generally speaking, when we're doing discharges, it takes about a month to get a half foot off of the lake. So it's a very long, drawn-out process. It's one of the challenges in managing water in Lake Okeechobee. Water comes in a lot faster than we can get it out. And so to be able to manage lake levels aggressively, we have to do these discharges, which bring their own set of challenges as well. They contribute to environmental impacts downstream and certainly don't make the water aesthetically pleasing.
Sure, and that's the give and take that, you know, you as water managers have to grapple with, is the environmental offsets of releasing them into the east and west estuaries, as well as maintaining the lake level so that it doesn't reach, you know, as you said, performance issues. Does that mean that in any way, and I should have clarified by saying that the Corps would, I was asking more so if the Corps is planning to increase discharges, if possible, the amount of flow in preparation for the storm, or is there just not enough time?
Yeah, so there's really not enough time to do so in preparation for the storm. Our water managers are going through their regular routine of gathering input from scientists on both coasts, gathering input from the South Florida Water Management District that will inform a decision that we have typically announced on Thursdays. And at this point, I believe we plan a similar announcement tomorrow.
And I spoke with the South Florida Water Management District yesterday on Tuesday, and they were saying, you know, they draw their levels down based on forecast, and they got a forecast. And this speaks to how unpredictable these storms can be. But, you know, they were seeing anywhere from 2 to 8 inches of rain. If the lake gets hit on that 8-inch end, would that bring it up to the higher levels of capacity for the lake? Would that make it up into the 17, 18-foot area?
Well, so that, and that's kind of, it's really hard to say, and calls for a great degree of speculation. The lake is a very large piece of real estate. And so typically, if we see an 8-inch rain, it's not going to fall uniformly 8 inches all across the lake. But the question is always, how much rain? What's the intensity of that rain? Where exactly does it fall? So I think we've seen tropical systems that have produced a wide variety of effects. Tropical Storm Colin earlier this year had very little impact on lake levels. Tropical Storm Isaac from 2012, which dropped a lot of rain in the Kissimmee Basin north of the lake, caused the lake to rise 3 feet in the span of 6 weeks.
So it just depends. Yeah, and so I guess regardless of the forecast, there's only so much you guys can do right now in terms of addressing the lake level.
Correct. What we can do is constantly monitor conditions, continue to stay abreast of certainly the forecasts going on as soon as we can after the storm passes. Don't wait another 2 weeks. We'll go ahead and conduct another inspection of the dike as soon as it's safe to do so, and identify any problems early so that we give ourselves maximum time to address any issues.
Would you anticipate increasing flows after this storm?
I think there is a real possibility if the lake rises that our water control plan could provide guidance that would allow for increased flow. So that's a very real possibility.
Thank you for taking the time, John.
Okay.
That was U.S. Army Corps of Engineers spokesman John Campbell speaking with WGCU's Topher Forjas earlier today. For the remainder of the hour, we turn our attention to Hurricane Matthew's destruction as it passed over Haiti Tuesday. The center of the storm made landfall around 7 a.m. yesterday as the first major hurricane to hit the island nation in 50 years. The human toll remains unknown, but the Miami Herald has reported at least two confirmed deaths. Matthew hit Haiti's southern peninsula hardest, with 11 coastal communities there reporting flooding. Now, flooding and mudslides pose a danger, as does the threat of cholera. And more than 61,000 people there are still living in tents following the devastating earthquake that hit in 2010, killing more than 300,000 people. The Miami Herald also reports that a lack of supplies in the country's shelters is of particular concern. Joining me now is Mark Hinley, Chief Operating Officer for the Naples-based nonprofit Hope for Haiti. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Good afternoon, John. Thank you for having us. Very much appreciated.
Oh, I appreciate you being with us, especially on such short notice. I understand Hope for Haiti has about 50 staffers in the country who rode out the storm there now. Have you had much contact with them? What have they been able to tell you about their safety or what they've seen?
Yes, that's correct. We have about 50 staff. We have heard from more than half of that staff, and that number is growing. That is our primary concern at this moment. It's the first prong of our response, is establishing where our people are, what their situation is. In any situation like this, our staff, while they're our primary responders, they're also primarily affected by the storm. And so balancing the need for outward response with sort of inward stewardship is our primary focus right now. So what they're seeing right now on the ground is varying levels of impact. Our primary area, which is Lakai, which is located just east of where the landfall was in the southwestern peninsula of Haiti, was very heavily impacted. The immediate impacts right now that we're seeing are certainly flooding. These are low-lying coastal areas impacted by storm surge, but the greater impact has actually been wind damage. As you would imagine, most of the structures that are built down there are not secure, so roofs, walls, gates, anything loosely put together has been either destroyed or severely damaged. And so we're still assessing the exact needs of our primary response and our partners, but the images and the stories right now are not good.
All right. And disaster relief is certainly just a part of your organization's work there, but do you anticipate that taking on, just much more of a primary role, at least in the immediate aftermath?
Absolutely. So we've basically suspended all of our normal program operations. We're in full response mode right now. We have pre-positioned in Haiti over 10,000 meals and 1,000 emergency response packs at all times. We've already received commitments from our primary supply and medications partners. Over the last 24 hours, we're shipping about $10 million worth of emergency relief and supplies to Port-au-Prince in the next couple of days. Our goal will be to get that out as soon as possible. We work with over 40 partners in southern Haiti, both on the education side and on the healthcare side. So that's schools, hospitals, other providers in country. So our goal is to get the supplies there as fast as possible, get that to our areas, and then make sure that those that need it the most get it first.
Are you looking to send more staffers as well in the coming days or weeks?
We actually are mobilizing a team right now, so we do have access to private aviation. The commercial airlines right now are not operating in Haiti,
right.
So we're sending our first response team, who is a seasoned team. They've experienced prior earthquake, prior disasters. They're former ex-military, just a seasoned team of professionals. So they'll be going in tomorrow privately, and they'll begin to assess the situation and then provide immediate response as well, and also coordination. The communication right now is not good. Cell phone service, data service is very spotty. So it's critical for us to get seasoned people in country that know what they're doing to be able to mobilize our assets as quickly and as efficiently as possible.
And I mentioned that, in many ways, Haitians are still reeling from the devastation of the 2010 earthquake. Tens of thousands of people still living in tents there. Is that just going to make things that much more difficult in responding to Matthew?
Absolutely. The prolonged issue with the tent villages is obviously a breakout of waterborne diseases, specifically cholera. We're very blessed to report that we have cholera medications, large quantities, on its way down there right now. We do work in some very remote areas where that also have very loosely built homes. And so, again, the long-term fear beyond the initial response is going to be illness breakout. So cholera prevention, clean water access is going to be critical, especially in the areas that you mentioned. Most of the tent villages are still in the Port-au-Prince area.
Mm-hmm.
from what we understand, that area was not hit quite as bad as the southwest area where the landfall was. So if there is a saving grace for the people who live in tent villages, it's that the bulk of that appears to have been somewhat mitigated by where the storm actually hit the island.
And if folks hearing our voices now, you know, want to get involved, want to help out in some way, what's the best way that folks can help through Hope for Haiti?
Sure. The best way right now would be to allow us to mobilize resources in country, and that would come from just making a monetary donation. Anyone can go to www.hopeforhaiti.com. That's four spelled out, F-O-R. There's a landing page pop-up that will direct you to our response and to donations. We're four-star rate on Cherry Navigator. We're guide-star gold. We have full disclosure. So anyone that chooses to make a gift is appreciated, but please know that it's well stewarded and will be, particularly in this situation as well.
And I remember after the earthquake in Haiti, there were a lot of folks who were just volunteering their time, helping to sort and organize supplies that were going to be sent. Is that something you have a need for now or anticipate perhaps having a need for in the coming days and weeks?
Absolutely. So anyone that wants to donate supplies, our Naples office can accept that. Our address is 1021 Fifth Avenue North down here in Naples. We have a warehouse. We're set up to ship large quantities, large pallets to Haiti on a very rapid basis. The key items right now would be basically personal hygiene supplies, toothbrush, toothpaste, anything related to personal hygiene. If anybody has any water purification tablets or filters, that would be huge. We'll take equipment as well, so chainsaws, picks, shovels, anything like that that can be easily transported but also used for disaster cleanup. And again, anything else that people have that for an emergency, batteries, flashlights, radios, prepackaged meals, all that is highly valuable in these response situations.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for today's show. We have been speaking with Mark Henley, Chief Operating Officer of the Naples-based nonprofit Hope for Haiti. And Mark, of course, you know, our thoughts are with you and of course, with your staffers that you haven't been able to make a touch with yet in Haiti. And of course, everyone there who has suffered through as the Matthew was a Category 4 storm whenever it hit the island yesterday. Earlier in the show, we heard from meteorologist Deborah Alberto from the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network Storm Center. Stay tuned to WGCU for regular updates on the progress of Hurricane Matthew and through our mobile app, Florida Storms. There's more information on today's show and past editions of the program online at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. Continue the conversation on Facebook at WGCU Public Media and on Twitter using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Thanks to my producers Richard Chinqui, Topher Forges, A.J. Leonard, and Tarek Halligan. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.